As we roll through a huge lineup of guests today, we just had a great conversation with Daniel Carcillo. Marian Hossa was here, Brian Campbell as well, and we're not even halfway through. So we'll keep it going as Dennis Savard sits down with us here at the convention. Adam Hogue, Mark Carman, Troy Murray with us for the entire show today.
The great Dennis Savard.
The great Dennis Savard. Sorry, Dennis.
Where's everybody? Let's go.
There it is.
Hey, nice to be on WGN, and thank you for listening to WGN, right? So it's been a great weekend. I think you guys have had a great time, I'm sure. And as we say all the time, it's a lot of fun for us as well. So thank you, Blackhawk fans. Thanks for being here.
And thanks to you for coming by, good sir. So it's just fun for, I think, Adam and I just to look at the two of you sitting right here, former teammates now getting to share a
You've never said that you liked looking over here until
That's true.
You just happen to be in the view of looking at the great Dennis Savard.
I mean, we're on another level right now with Savvy up here. But just, so what... I don't know, when you look at Troy and you think back to being on the ice with him, like I see the big smile here. What would you say?
Well, we know Troy was a great player, no question. I mean, he was. We were a 1-2 punch at center at the time in the 80s. I think we played 7 years together. 83, you came in.
82, 83.
Yeah.
We were drafted the same year.
Yeah, we started playing together 82, 83. So 7, 8 years, and well, you remember their line: Kurt Fraser, of course, and Eddie Olczyk. Know, that was
what was the nickname?
Who's got it?
Clydesdales.
Yeah, right. They got there, though.
Big, slow, and not real bright.
But, you know, we go back in those years, and their line, our line as well, and, you know, we faced the Oilers, I think, 3 times or 4 times in the semifinals and obviously didn't get the result that we wanted. You know, probably one of the best 5 teams ever. But... not because Troy, not because we're here together, but we know what Troy's all about. A good guy, a good person, a great teammate, and obviously does a great job on the radio. I text him. Sometimes I leave between the middle, second, and third period, depending, you know, I've had before the game, and I like to listen to him and John. I really do. And I text him once in a while, you know. We talk.
True story. I mean, I'll be sitting there, and I, you know, I'll look at my phone during the TV times out, and you know, hey, good point there. Hey, you know, like what you said. Yeah. He listens. Good.
I want to get sentimental for just one more second. Can you just talk about what it was like to walk up the steps at the greatest stadium in the history of the world? That's unfortunately no longer with us. No disrespect to technology and things moving forward, but Chicago Stadium, like that's like home growing up type of thing for me. I what was that like for you?
Oh, great building. I mean, it's, you know, especially us starting there, you know, together as a rookie. I was a rookie as well in 1980. Troy was in 82, 83. You don't forget those moments. You know, you don't forget the building itself. You'll never forget those times. I mean, we're in a great era today. Hockey is in a great place. And, you know, I think we know what ownership here, along with John and his staff, has done here for this organization. It's been awesome, along with all our fans. But Chicago Stadium, I mean, you know, people remember tonight the All-Star game. If some of them are old enough to remember 91, I believe it was. You know, I was in that game. But I remember it was really, really loud. But I remember the most loudest it's been, I think you could call it a tie, is the game we played the Edmonton Oilers. We're up 2-1 in the series in game 4 at home. I started the game that night along with Larm, sitting, you know, standing next to Larmer, and I couldn't believe how loud it was. So, you know, it is loud at United Center, no doubt. You know, when playoff comes around, you guys, you've had a taste of 3 cups now in the last 7 years, so you like it. And then we feel the energy once playoff starts. Obviously, it's always there during the season, but the playoffs, it gets back to the Chicago Stadium when it gets to playoffs. Yeah.
It was interesting back in the day, and Savvy, you remember this, that a lot of visiting teams would come in and they would bring up players from the minors, or they'd give them an opportunity, because they said, and this was a fact, that if you could play in the Chicago Stadium, you could play in any building in the National Hockey League. It was a test for players to come in and see how they could handle the atmosphere in the old Chicago Stadium in a hostile environment and see how they handled it. And if you could deal with the Chicago crowd and the Chicago Stadium, you could play anywhere in the NHL.
You know, I was a visitor, too.
Yeah.
You know, you guys tell you a quick story. Not a good one, but it was a story. I came back here in 1991 with the Montreal Canadiens. All right, and there's overtime. It's 1-1, game's tied up. We're going to overtime. I get a penalty in overtime. I go to the penalty box. I'm going to the Blackhawks penalty box.
I remember.
And I'm reacting the guy that's in the box, open the door. He goes, the other way. So, and the Hawks end up scoring. When we lost the game 2-1. It was just a bad time that night. I'll tell you, went to the wrong penalty box and got scored against. I mean, so, but hey, we're here to talk about stories, and, you know, it's fun to remember these kind of things.
Well, what are the biggest differences between back when you guys played and now? I mean, we see each and every season how hard it has been for Stan Bowman right now to kind of keep this going with the salary cap the way it is. And unfortunately, you have to say goodbye to certain guys. Like we talked to Brian Campbell earlier, who had to go away. Fortunately, now he's back. But it's tough. I mean, but beyond that, too, I mean, how is the game different?
You know, the game itself is in a lot of ways completely different. If you go back and you look at the old tapes or the games that when Dennis and I played, I mean, it was hooking and holding and all the stuff that they took out of the game. You could just sit there. And I did. I watched a game with my son a couple years ago, and they were playing an old game. And he goes, like, penalty, 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 penalty. But that's all it was. Now that, you know, the game's cleaned up, and I think the game is in a really good state, it's almost become in a position where it's become too dangerous because the speed is so great, and these athletes are so big. You know, you look at these guys and how good a shape they are. And Savvy will know this. I mean, a little bit of a different attitude of the way that the game is played and the athletes are right now. When I came and when Dennis was here, I came out of the University of North Dakota. Savvy was already here. They had ashtrays built into the stalls at the old Chicago Stadium, and that's a fact. I mean, Savvy, I don't think it's a hidden fact. Was a smoker, and
yeah.
Right before the game, everybody would be having a cigarette and they'd tap it out in their stall and do up their skates, and we'd head up the stairs.
That's hockey for you.
It is. So the game has changed a lot. I mean, these guys right now, when we tell them stories about, you know, how we came into the NHL in the early 80s is about as far-fetched for us to understand that the guys before us were taking the train between cities at times. I mean, it's a different animal now, and it's a real good game, and I think it's very exciting. But the comparisons are, the game itself is played under the same rules, but it's a different game. It's a different game.
Yeah, and to add to Troy's point, you know, the game is faster. We all know that. But the details of each player, a lot of players now are playing two ways. In our days, you know, I was more known as a one-way player. Today, they play both ways. You see, Marinos is a great example, how hard he comes back to neutral zone when he comes back to his own end. And you see some of our kids over the years, they follow this lead that way. They come back and backtrack the puck a lot harder than we did, for sure. But, yeah, no, it's, as Troy said, the game's in a good place. I like it. It's fun. I know it's fast. And fortunately, you know, sometimes you worry about injuries, that type of thing. But, you know, our games were 3 hours. Now they're 2 hours and 15 minutes. Yeah. And fast and fun to watch. Right? And folks, we all know this. You know, I'm not trying to be like Mr. Correct here, but we are so lucky to have some of those players in this lineup now with Kane and Panarin together. And hope they'll play together for another 7, 8, 10 years, maybe more. But boy, we're blessed to have them. They're fun to watch. And I know, yeah, thank you.
No doubt.
How special is that? I know that you along with Patrick Kane have a very special relationship, and it goes back to you know, your days here when he first came into the organization. You look at a guy like Patrick Kane, and as good as he was when he came in, last year's year was incredible. I mean, just talk about the ability and your relationship with a guy like Patrick Kane, how incredible this athlete is.
Yeah, you think, you know, that he's reached the top of his career. I mean, he's... The way he's played, no, he's got another level this last year. Like Troy said, you know, he had another level to him. You know, the things that I remember with Patrick is I knew from day one that he loved to be at the rink. Love to be on the ice. First on, first, last off. He'd play with pucks all the time. We'd work on his hands and take shots on the goalies. He'd play the games, whatever they're doing now. At the end of practice, when it's free time, he stays on the ice for a long time. I still think he does. I know he did when I was coaching. And that's something you can't teach. I mean, you know, we all love the game that we played, but, you know, I think he's at another level for that. And that's why he's got the success that he has. He adores to be on the ice. He loves to be at the rink. He loves to be, you know, the guy. You know, I always say to him, you know, I said, you always play on big stages. I mean, you score big goals at big crucial times. You'll make big plays at crucial times. I mean, that's not easy to do. That's why I say we're blessed. I go to every game. Troy gets to watch every game and call the games with John. We're lucky. And I know you guys appreciate it, but I'm talking for myself because I'm, you know, the Hawks have been so good to all of us, what they do for us, my family, and I go get to watch these guys play. Wow, a lot of fun. And we get rings, too. That's nice.
But Sammy, part of what you're talking about, I think, is that with these guys, you can never count them out, whether it's a single game, whether it's a series, whether they're down 3-0, 3-1, whatever it is. And it's because of what you're just talking about. I mean, the way that Kane or Taze or some of these other guys just step up in moments where – maybe there's 2 minutes left in the game, they're down one, they absolutely need a goal. And Taves, who spends, you know, a lot of time out there doing all the little things, not worrying about, he says, okay, now's my time, got to go score, and he does, and he makes it look so easy. And it's obviously not easy, but he makes it look that way. That's my favorite thing about this organization right now is that they could be, whether it's a series or a game, I never count them out until, you know, that last horn goes off and it's game seven and they actually lost to the Blues. And even then you're sitting there like, man, that really happened? Because you just think that they're going to come back and win it. And I just think that's probably just a mental will that they have to have, and they just carry all the time on the ice.
I mean, I agree with you. I look at these guys and everybody says, you know, what do you think their chances are in the playoffs? And they says, in a seven-game series, I'm not going to go against these guys.
Yeah.
I've seen what these guys are all about, the will and the desire that these guys have to dig deep at critical moments of a series and find a way to will their way to success has been incredible. You look at the ability of them to play through the Anaheim series a year ago. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. It was just amazing, and they were behind in that series. And Jonathan Taves in Anaheim just took over the game.
Yeah.
He said, you know what, I'm going to lead this team and we're going to get out of this mess and we're going to find a way to win. And they did. And when you see that determination from a bunch of guys, and that's why this core group is so special. It's just amazing. When you see them on a day and a daily basis, that you kind of underappreciate what these guys, as Dennis is saying, are all about. But the drive that these guys have, the mental fortitude that this core group of guys have is something like I have never seen before. And maybe, as Dennis kind of was talking about, I don't think I've ever seen this other than a group of guys than the Edmonton Oilers who had that same mentality as a young group of guys that played together, and they would do whatever it took to win hockey games and to win Stanley Cups. And that's what we have here.
Let's talk about the offseason real quick here. So you had Andrew Ladd, who wasn't here forever but still had an impact, and Andrew Shaw and Tavo. And even Dale Weiss, who went and signed a four-year deal with the Flyers as well. So as far as the next season coming up here, what do you think the impact of all the changes are going to be?
I'm excited. I mean, I like to see kids. You know, you look at Pittsburgh. There are a lot of kids this year that came in, helped that team out to win the Cup. I think we're in the same situation as they were last year. We're going to have some kids going to fight for 3-4 jobs and make a difference. I believe that. You know, of course, Shazi's was a hard one to lose. We know that. He's a great kid, and everybody loves him, and we do, and I know you guys do as well. But there's a business decision there. I mean, there's a cap that has to be respected, and obviously, you know, it was impossible for the Hawks to sign either him or Ladder. And Ladder, I'll tell you, I've coached that guy. He's one of the guys I enjoy the most coaching. Zero maintenance. Comes to play every day. Didn't have to worry about him preparing him. You didn't have to worry about him whether he's going to play hard or not. He's one of those guys, and good for the Islanders to get him. I mean, again, but for us, you know, there was no money in there to keep him here. So I don't know. I'm looking forward to see your kids. It's going to be a fun year. I know it will be.
I'm going to throw this question at you. The 2010 team, which I thought was just an incredible team with guys like Dustin Byfuglien, we got Adam Burrish, Ben Eager, all these guys back this year who were part of that 2010 team. If you could pick one guy and say, I wanted that guy, I want to bring him back after that, who was the guy that you would bring back?
Well, of course, I'm going to say Buff. Right.
You know, but I, you know what? Yeah. People ask me, I love Dustin Byfuglien. Yeah. I mean, he is a unique player. I don't think there's anybody in the National Hockey League with the skill set of Dustin Byfuglien at 200 and whatever he's listed at. He's heavier than that. But for him to have that ability to play the way that he does with the size that he has, is there's nobody else in the National Hockey League. I can't even think of a guy, and I've thrown it out there.
Yeah.
But I would have had Andrew Ladd.
Yeah.
Because you could play him in any situation, penalty kill, power play, great leadership. I mean, Andrew Ladd was the guy that said, I want that guy back.
Yeah, no question. I mean, he was a first-round pick. I think he was drafted fourth overall for a reason. I mean, it took him a little longer than some guys to get to reach his peak of his career or get, you know, to where he should have been. But for us, yeah, you're right. No, I agree. But
You still like Big Buff.
I like Big Buff. And I like him as a forward. Still do.
He wants to play forward.
By the way, Choi, you guys remember this. I put him up as a forward.
That's right. It was you.
He came as a defenseman.
Yeah.
I remember, like, yesterday. Came to camp, weighed 285 pounds, right? And I felt like, yeah, he did. I mean, I felt, too, at the time that, you know, for him to get down in weight, he can't play defense. He's going to have to be a power forward. You know, and that I moved them to the wing. And obviously, I know in 2010, they won the cup. Part of the reason why they won the cup, he was in front of the net all the time in Luongo's face every game. So, yeah, but, you know, Russ, a great player. He's a great, great defenseman. But I still think he's a better forward.
Did you know right away that he was going to have the impact that he would? Like, oh, this guy's going to be a stutter. It's like you kind of had to see it all kind of unfold before you're like, oh, my God, he's better than I thought he was.
Well, I felt that he was a very confident person. You know, that was a huge thing to have, even though he's a big, big man. It was good to see, and I knew that he had some potential because he had lots of skill. And I felt that if he did lose, you know, 30 pounds, play at 250, he could be a real force. And, well, we know what happened since then. I mean, he's really took himself to another level and became the player that he is. He's tremendous.
It is interesting looking back on that 2010 team and how many guys there are scattered around the league. Some who've come back like Ladd and Campbell, but you know, it's amazing how much talent is out there just from that team. That was a fun one to watch.
You see these guys now, and Savvy, you're a guy that would appreciate it probably more than most. The connection between Patrick Kane and Panarin out there is pretty exciting. What Anisimov did is tremendous because you gotta fill that role in there and know when to get out of the way and let these guys have the freedom that they want. But talk about this relationship, the way that these two guys play together, because it is something special to watch Kane and Panarin play.
Yeah, and Anisimov, you're right, Troy. We never mentioned him, but he does all the little things well. Talk about two-way player. And he'll get in front of that. He'll stand in front and pay a price there. I don't know how they do it. They both want the puck. There's only one puck. But they look for each other. You know, I love when they start cycling the puck up high and the defensemen start to be active up. You know, they start to be active. They're going in and out. Here's Panarin coming outside the blue line behind Kane and then go. Our defensemen are already down below the circles. And they make a pass to each other. And it's amazing. It's not easy to do. And it's under pressure, too. Don't kid yourself. Guys want to close up on them and give them less time and space as much as possible. But, yeah, and they could one-time pucks. I mean,
I go to pretty much every practice, and Patrick Kane and Panarin, after every practice, kind of do this thing. They just throw pucks across the ice, and they one-time it for 10, 15 minutes, and they just shoot pucks. And it's hilarious to watch because Panarin has a real sense of humor. Real sense of humor, and Patrick Kane's got a sense of humor, but Panarin is kind of a different animal. He likes to get into Patrick Kane's skin. He'll throw one, and he won't put it right in his wheelhouse, and he'll do it on purpose. He'll pass it on his skate, and Kane will just look at him like, why would you do that? And he'll one-time it into the net. And then he'll do the same thing to Panarin, and Panarin will fire it into the top corner. And it's just kind of a competition between these two guys, and it's incredible. And you talked about, you know, Savvy, about, you know, the dedication for Patrick Kane. after the games, I do the post-game show and with Judd, and I'll walk down to the locker room. And by this time, a lot of the players have already left the building and they're on their way home. Yeah, I was sitting down and I was having a beer with the trainers, and I heard the loud music going on in the workout room at the United Center. And I'm like, this is 11 o'clock or 11:15 at night. And I just kind of wandered into the room. And Panarin and Kane were the only two guys in there, and they were doing box jumps about the height of this table. The two of them, they have got such a tremendous connection. It's unbelievable. That's and cool. I really think that Patrick Kane looks at Panarin and he says, you know, here's a guy. And that close bond, there's a mentorship that's going on for Patrick to have Panarin under his wing on the road. They hang together. They'll have dinner at the hotels and stuff. It's really special to see what's going on between these two guys. It's unbelievable.
Savvy, thank you for being here. I just want to read one text on your way out here. From the 770, in tears listening to Savvy. So great to hear truly good people in professional sport. Hashtag role models to our youth. So look at you connecting with the people. Yeah,
thank you.
Thanks, folks. And again, thank you for being here this weekend. So, see you soon.